Welcome to Parents' Perspective. I'm not going, wailed 15-year-old Stacy, throwing herself face down on her bed. You know how I hate going to museums, and now we have to stay with Aunt Grace and Uncle Ned. Boring. Come on, sweetie, her dad tried in his gentlest voice. It's only for a few days. Maybe there'll be something you'd like to do while we're there. Yeah, right, came from inside Stacy's pillow. I've got an idea, her dad replied. Why don't I call the city's tourism office and ask for some brochures about what there is to see and do? Then we can look 'em over and choose some stuff we'd like. How about if I choose? Stacy turned her head in her dad's direction. Well, that's fine. Why don't you pick a choice you'd like, and I'll let your brother have a choice, too. That's fair. Maybe we could find ideas faster online, Stacy suggested, turning over and hopping off the bed. Wouldn't it be okay if we went out late at night, like to a club? From a parent's perspective, what is the best and least stressful way of traveling with teenagers? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest has done a great deal of traveling herself and has written many travel guides. Candice H. Stapen, an award-winning travel writer, has written 23 travel books. Her latest is National Geographic Guide to Caribbean Family Vacations. Her work appears in many publications, including USA Weekend, USAtoday.com, Family Fun, Redbook, and Caribbean Travel and Life. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Candice.
Thank you.
Why is traveling with teenagers different from traveling with younger kids?
Duh. Well, first of all, unless you travel with your teenagers, you won't see them. Because your time at home is going to be limited, as any parent knows, to swapping car keys and phone messages. Teenagers are busy, and when they're home, they're hunkered down in their room or they're on the telephone, and they really don't have a lot of time for parents. So what happens is you're likely to only interact with them when you're saying negative things, like, why didn't you walk the dog? Or how come you didn't clean up your room? You're just trying to catch their attention. But when you go away with them, then you have time to be with them. They can get to know you as a person, not just as a parent. And you have the time to listen with them. But first you have to get them to go, and that's not so easy.
Okay. You know, a lot of people take trips with their teens and let the teens bring a friend. How do you feel about that?
That's a really good strategy, provided that you have some veto power over the friend and you have some rules laid out. Teens need other teens. Now, what happens when they take a friend, it's going to cut down your one-on-one time. So you have to sort of try to establish some way you can still have that one-on-one time with your teen. But also with a teen, you know that they'll be safer. You know, you can't limit a teen to certain areas of a resort. They're pretty much going to wander all around. With someone else, they'll be safer. If you go to a beach resort, you might feel a little bit better about them taking a long walk on the boardwalk when there's a friend. But some things that I always do when my kids have taken friends with them is, first of all, you need to get a medical release. Nobody likes to think about problems that might occur. But I'll tell you that once I took a friend, my daughter Alyssa, and I took her friend Leah. They were in high school, and they were going snowboarding. And the first thing, first day, they were learning how to snowboard. The first thing, and Leah is a wonderful athlete. The first thing she did was break her wrist. But we went to the emergency area at the ski thing, and I had the form that gave me permission to seek medical attention for her. I had the insurance information, so she was taken care of right away. If you don't have that medical release, they will stabilize the teen and wait until they can get in touch with the parent. And that's just a lot of delays and a lot of uncomfortable stuff. So always travel with a medical release. Always travel with a list of, this child's allergic to this. You know, just keep it. In all the years I've gone traveling, only used it once when Leah broke her wrist, but I was really glad I had it.
What's the most important point for parents to remember about traveling with teens, besides, I guess, take plenty of aspirin with you?
Well, teens, you know, let them choose. Nobody likes to be told what to do. But you also have to remember it's not an absolute democracy. If you and your husband decide you want to go to the beach, but you have three kids and they say, no, we want to go to Africa, you know, 3-2, we win. It doesn't work that way. Give them a few choices within a reasonable range of what you think you can afford and the amount of time you can take off.
The checkbook has many more votes than the non-checkbook.
Yeah, definitely, it does. And time, you say, well, you know, we can take a long weekend and we can go to the mountains or we can go to the beach. What would you prefer? And listen to them.
I think parents have to be prepared to accept what the input is from these kids, at least pay attention.
Absolutely. So the trick is, if you really don't want to go to the mountains, don't put it up as one of the choices, hoping that they'll say beach. You know, put up two or three things that you can live with, and then listen. And then listen to why they're choosing that, because that's important, too.
How do we actually involve the teenagers in planning a family trip?
Well, again, it's a matter of talking. Let's say they don't want to go. Well, it can be as simple as saying, you know, I can't go that weekend because it's the weekend of the junior prom. Well, you know, you didn't know that, but maybe you can change the schedule. Maybe your high school student is going to be kicked off the soccer team if he or she misses one more practice. So listen carefully to timing. You know, they have very involved lives that we may not be aware of, all the things that are going on. So listen. But if there is a free weekend, if there's a school holiday, I mean, my kids were always really happy to go away with me if I made sure that there was a place they wanted to go or there'd be activities for them. Teens need other teens. They do not want to be rusticated. So, you know, you might like that wonderful log cabin at the state park that's way in the middle of nowhere, and you make a fire and you sit in front of it, and they will feel like they are on the moon. They will whine and be really grumpy, and you don't want a weekend of grumpy.
We had a family vacation a number of years ago when our two oldest were teenagers and everybody else was not. And I thought I had done a lovely thing. I had gotten a house at the beach, and it was a residential area, and it was very pretty and quiet. And the two teenagers came in and looked around and said, "And so?"
I know.
They spent the whole time sitting up till some very late hour watching MTV, and that was their beach vacation.
I understand that. I've had situations like that, and I've learned from it. So look for places that have activities. A good thing, a resort, an all-inclusive is good, because the other thing about activities is they're expensive. And if you don't go to a place that either has a package plan of activities that you can buy or an all-inclusive, you end up playing the bad guy. You know, every time your teen comes over and says, "God, I love that jet skiing. It's fabulous. I want to do it again. And, hey, it's only $150 a half an hour." You know, you have to say, well, you know, once is your big treat, and that blows the budget. You can't do it again. But if you go to a place that has a package, like unlimited jet skiing, or you can go twice and it's all included, then you don't have to play the bad guy. So
we always found that with ski trips with our kids. I'm not a skier. I'm the anchor person that sits by the fire with my book and my hot chocolate, and they always know where to find me. But we had to have package deals where they could ski all day and all evening for 3 days or 5 days or whatever it was. And it was much less expensive that way.
Yes, it is. So look for package plans. Look for all-inclusives.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion about traveling with teens.
Washington, D.C. with Kids, an excellent book by authors Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Candice Stapen about traveling with teenagers. Are there other pitfalls that we need to be aware of?
Well, again, the places for other teens, times. Sometimes resorts have kids programs or teen programs, but a really kid-oriented, teen-oriented program will not start in the morning because teens sleep late. Nobody is going to show up for the 9 a.m. volleyball. I mean, it's going to be the parent. And if there's a teen there, you can believe he's been dragged and threatened and, you know, provoked. Not at his best.
What about when you're going to a city, if you're traveling abroad to London, for example, or you're traveling to Washington, D.C.?
Cities are fabulous for teens. There's lots to do. Look online, get a good book. It's really a good thing to say to a teen, okay, you know, what do you want to do? Think of there's all the usual stuff, but think of some of the unusual things. Going to Chicago, going to Boston, try a comedy safari. You know, decide that you can go to comedy clubs with your teen. That's one of the evening activities that you can do, because there's usually there are places where there's no drinking, so you can do that. You can go to a show. London has fabulous theater, New York, D.C. You can do things like that. You want to have some activity planned in the evening with your teen that you approve of, because you do not want them, with or without a friend, walking around in a strange city, someplace they may not be sensitive to the changes in neighborhoods. You want to keep them on a somewhat tight rein in the city. So the easiest way to do that is plan some evening activities that you all will enjoy. There are some museums that have fabulous things. Check ahead, and you can also ask the hotel's concierge, because usually museums will have one day a week. Often it's midweek where they're open till 9. And depending on the season, if it's summer, they might be having a jazz event, like jazz and coffee. Or they might be having some special interesting lecture, you know, not boring lecture, but something, something good. So let the teen choose. Again, you might be helpful in starting the discussion by getting a number of options, because sometimes it's hard to get teens going. You know, to get them from 0 to 5 miles an hour is tough. So here are the brochures, here are the museums. This is some interesting stuff we can do.
I have a friend who had her teenage son, high school age son, plan a trip across the country. The family was driving across the country, and she gave him certain parameters, but basically he got to choose where they stopped.
Oh, that's great.
Places they stopped, and therefore he was really invested in figuring out what to do when they stopped in those places. And there's another teenager in the family and a younger child, and he consulted with the kids, and then they told the parents.
That's a great idea, yeah. I mean, the more that teens feel a part of the trip, the more they're going to cooperate.
Now, what about a teen who, like the one in the story starts out, they don't want to come on the family trip? No, no way, they're not going with their family.
Well, ask them why. I mean, they'll say it's boring. Say, well, we can work on that. What would you like to do? Again, is it a conflict with a boyfriend, girlfriend, something happening at school, the sports team? I mean, there can be real issues, homework, the report that's due. But other than that, just I think if you let the teen know that this isn't going to be a boring vacation like perhaps the one you did last year or the year before, and that you want to be with your teen, that they really will warm up to that idea, and then empower them, say, okay, you know, we're going to San Francisco. You pick what we're going to do, you know, for this day. What would you like to do?
Now, you brought up the everyday schedule to some extent. You said don't plan to start early in the morning, or at least don't plan to have your teen start an activity early in the morning. That doesn't mean you can't be doing some separate things at different times of the day, I assume.
Oh, no, that often works well. Like I, when I'm at a place, like to get up fairly early and go out and walk around. I just love to walk around cities. So often I will just leave my kids sleeping in the hotel room. My husband and I will go out, or I'll go out on my own. I'll tell them to order room service, even though, you know, it's a bit pricey. They sort of make it brunch. I'll go out, and I said, well, okay, I'll check back at 11, and then they're up. And they're happy. And I've had some time on my own. I've walked around. Perhaps I went browsing around antique stores, which will make them both crazy. They don't have to do that with me. So we're kind of ready. Or conversely, if it's a really important thing, I could say, you know, we're going to go on a hot air balloon ride, but you have to get up at 6 a.m. They're not thrilled, but they'll get up for that. But I wouldn't do that more than once a vacation.
Now, when you're planning a schedule, say a daily schedule, what kinds of things do you want to build into that schedule besides activities that they're going to like? And you mentioned room service, or making sure that they eat at a time and what they like. What about breaks, rest periods, snack times, whatever?
Oh, always beware of food. Teens seem to be always hungry. I always carry, you know, I let them carry whatever they want, power bars or some kind of granola bar or juice or something. I try to not take too much time off for lunch, but a nice little cafe, maybe even a picnic. Go to the local grocery store or deli, get a sandwich, and picnic in the park. Parks are wonderful places for people watching. Depending, we might, you know, throw a frisbee, or we're dog people, and if you're in a park, there are all these funny little dogs you can say hello to, and that's a nice way of meeting locals. So yeah, take time for breaks, and then we'll do something in the afternoon, and allow some free time. You know, it shouldn't be, okay, 11 o'clock we're at the art museum, and 12 o'clock we're at the natural history, and 1 o'clock, you know, we have to be at the science museum, because if your teen is interested in exploring something in the art museum, let them. Talk about that. You know, do the other museums another day or skip it if you don't have time. You know, enjoy the moment.
A little difference in that kind of schedule. One of the things Sandy and I have discovered is sometimes, some days, you may want to have your big meal at lunchtime because there's something you want to do in the evening, and it's less expensive to eat a big meal with a family in some of the restaurants during the day.
Definitely. That is a good tip. And also, after a whole day, if you've done that, and after a whole day of, you know, walking all over the city and you're just tired, nobody wants to even sit up straight in a restaurant, go to the hotel room and order pizza in. Mm-hmm. You know, you could do that. They deliver to hotels.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion about traveling with teens.
For an audio cassette copy of Any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Candice Stapen about traveling with teens.
The thing that we've sort of found in our family is the kids take backpacks everywhere, even little ones. And we have, I think everybody at this point finally got into the habit of taking a book so that if things are intolerably boring, they always have a book. And so it's made things a lot calmer.
Even if it's just waiting in lines, that helps.
Right. Mm-hmm. A book, mm-hmm. a Discman, iPod, whatever gizmo is around. But that helps.
You can also, of course, stick food in the backpack.
Absolutely. Food and water.
We've talked about this a little bit, but maybe we could focus in on it a little bit more. What types of family trips do you feel teens tend to enjoy the most?
In other words,
obviously, the ones to the Dollhouse Museum are not going to be high on the list.
But. No, not. Soft adventure is great. It's one of the rising trends in travel. It's relatively inexpensive, depending upon what you choose, of course, and it's fun. Like,
you want to explain what
soft adventure
means?
Leaves the adventure in, takes the risks out. So, in other words, you're going on a guided whitewater rafting trip. You're going with people who know what they're doing, and you get to test your limits a little. You're going mountain biking. You're hiking with llamas. You're going canoeing or kayaking. But you're going with a group led by a guide who knows what they're doing. So you get to test your limits. One thing a psychologist, Frank Farley, who studies risk-taking and travel, said that it's especially good, soft adventure is especially good for families with teenagers because it teaches teens appropriate risk-taking. Mm. And that's something they need to learn because obviously in life you have to take risks. That doesn't mean you jump off a building, but you have to know when maybe you put yourself out for a job that you're not sure you're going to get. That's a little bit out of your milieu. So appropriate risk-taking is very important. Plus, these things are incredibly fun. And the other bonus of a soft adventure is that your kids are really going to be better at it than you. So there's a really nice kind of role reversal. I know when I went whitewater rafting with Matt and Alyssa are paddling away, and I'm paddling away, and we're laughing, and we're in Costa Rica, and we actually wrapped ourselves around a rock, which is not a good thing to do. And the guide is giving us very careful instructions about how we're going to get out of this situation without flipping the raft. And my kids were great at it. I was sort of between laughing and just tired. I wasn't really very helpful. In fact, I was a detriment. But they didn't throw me overboard. And we got out of there. And it's good to see your kids taking that position of leadership.
No question my kids would be better at all of those things than I would. Okay, unexpected dividends that happen on trips. Could you tell us about any kinds of examples of family trips where they produced unexpected dividends? One example is what you just said, actually.
The rafting, yeah,
yes. You see. Kids being very much empowered with skills that parents don't have.
Just lots of times where your kids open up to you. I think that with teenagers, I found there are really two times when my kids would really talk to me when they were teens. One is if I had a long drive in the car at night with both of us facing forward and nobody else in the back seat. In a one-on-one situation, I'd find out about boyfriend, girlfriend, you know, the problem in history. And that's one reason for a road trip, if you can find that moment when you don't have everybody else in the car. But I think on trips, they just open up to you after they've sort of been with you. Walking along the beach with my daughter, you know, I found out a lot about high school cattiness and how really that's real and that happens. And I don't have solutions. I didn't have solutions for her, but just to empathize and say, yeah, I can still remember, you know, my friends who were not really friends in high school. And it's something we all experience. And I don't know why, but I can empathize. I can listen. So those are some of the really important unexpected dividends.
I think opportunities for walks along a beach or walks in the woods are key if you can get the kid to go.
Right. Or even, you know, my daughter and I share a love of chocolate. So sometimes in the afternoon, you know, maybe my husband and son might be watching some ball game in the city hotel. We'll sneak out. We'll go get some chocolate, ice cream, or sorbet, and, you know, we'll have a time to chat. Mm-hmm. And that's good, too.
Sometimes even cities can provide places where you can be together and not have the distraction of everybody else because the significant people are not necessarily with you.
Right,
you're back
exactly.
In the hotel,
yeah.
You're walking through the park or you're listening to an outdoor concert or something.
Right, or you're going to the bookstore or the gift shop or you're browsing something that other, you know, the other people in the family are not going to be interested in. So it's good to consciously think about having those moments to say things like, oh, you know, we want to go look at this shop and I know you're not going to be interested. We'll meet you back at the hotel in half an hour.
I think different kinds of issues emerge as the teenagers grow a little bit older towards the end of their teenage years and into their 20s. Recently, a family of very good friends of ours went to Hawaii with their two sons, and the issue arose in planning the trip. Did the older son get to bring his very significant girlfriend or not? And they decided, as a family, they met, they talked about it extensively, and they decided it would change the whole family dynamic on this trip, which was a lot of hiking, if they brought her. And so she wasn't invited. And my girlfriend said, I don't know how many more times we're going to have vacations like this where there's not another person involved. And they had four-way, very intensive family conversations at times because they were walking and nobody had to look at each other. You just kept walking along the trail. It's
right.
Like riding in the car at night.
Absolutely. And when you're huffing and puffing, you tend to just come to the point.
A lot faster.
And that's sort of another reason why parents might want to think about maybe not bringing another friend if the teenager is part of a family unit where he or she can have some time with a sibling that maybe they haven't had very much time together.
It was especially important in my family with my kids 10 years apart because, you know, when Matt went to college, my daughter was 8. So she really only had those 8 years living with him. So vacations were incredibly important for them for bonding.
We have two of your guides, Guide to Family Adventure Vacations and the Guide to Caribbean Family Vacations. And, of course, to us, they're fabulous and wonderful, and we've enjoyed what we've read in them. But I'm just curious if you have a favorite place that you've been in all these
trips. Well, I love just about anywhere with a beach and a turquoise sea is fabulous for me. So I love the Caribbean. But I think my family would say the most amazing vacation for us was going to Africa. The people are fabulous and the animals are incredible. There's a tremendous sense of peace and joy when you see, you know, scores of elephants and giraffe lumbering across the grassy plains and the mountains way in the distance. It's an incredible place. And I know it's a very difficult place to travel to these days, and you need to be careful and cautious, but we can't wait to get back to Africa.
So everybody who's listening, save your pennies, right?
Definitely save your pennies.
What resources do you suggest for our listeners who do want to begin to plan travel with their teens?
My books, National Geographic Guide to Caribbean Family Vacations and National Geographic Guide to Family Adventure Vacations in the U.S. and Canada, are both available online at Amazon.com. Check out websites. Check out Family Travel Network. They do a good job focusing about teenagers. For some guided soft adventure programs, think about Backroads. That's a good company. They do biking and hiking trips in the U.S. and abroad. Oars, Outdoor Adventure River Specialists. They do rafting trips in the U.S. and a few other places. So those are good resources. Sierra Club, actually. Say, you know, you really don't want to do an adventure trip. You want to go hiking, but you don't know how much you could do or what to bring. Sierra Club has beginning experiences for parents and kids, and often those are geared for younger kids, but check them out. They do a lot of things that are not very expensive at all.
Well, these have been wonderful resources, and you have been a wonderful resource yourself. So Candice Stapen, thank you so very much for being with us and helping us to learn more about traveling with teens.
Thank you.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of one of Candice's books about traveling with your family. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address and mention show number 205. Tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Washington, D.C. with Kids, our latest book, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our latest book, Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.